Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Monday. This is First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That is Nick Wright. Chris Canty is joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Our guy, Nick Wright, is in a phenomenal moon this morning.
Y'all watched some football yesterday? Oh, my goodness. Jen, are we talking about some football today? Don't worry about my personal finances. It just is a great morning to talk football in America.
Okay.
I'm going to dap you up again.
Fantastic weekend in the NFL.
What game we starting
so
with?
Much to get through this morning. We got to start in the AFC with the much anticipated matchup of the week.
Ravens-Bills?
Let's get right to it. Not quite. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs in Foxborough, where Tom Brady and the Pats were unstoppable. We picked this up in the third. Chiefs in field goal range. Mahomes finds Travis Kelce on third down, but he loses the ball thanks to Devin McCourty. Kelce was ruled down, but after review, it's ruled Patriots ball. You know who was still not happy about this? Bill Belichick. He thought the recovery could have gone for six. Ensuing drive, Brady finds rookie wideout N'Keal Harry, who tiptoes down the sideline to get into the end zone. But the refs rule Harry was out of bounds, even though he clearly was not. Patriots were out of challenges, so they would have to settle for a field goal to cut the lead to seven. One last possession for the Patriots. Chiefs send the house. Brady can't connect with Julian Edelman. And that's your ball game, folks. KC snaps the Patriots' 21-game home win streak. Patriots lose. Chiefs win. Nick, surprisingly, we'll start with you. How important was this win for this Kansas City team?
Well, if Kansas City hadn't won this game, they can't be considered a Super Bowl contender anymore. You can't have the up and down middle part of the season and then go to New England, a team in all likelihood you are going to have to face in the postseason, a team who beat you twice last year, now in crushing defeats in very close games, but beat you twice last year and lose to them again when they are clearly struggling, when they are playing their worst football, when their offense cannot find its footing for the better part of a month now, and then feel like you can win multiple road playoff games, that you can get to the Super Bowl, much less beat whatever juggernaut comes out of the NFC. So on the Chiefs side of things, the win, any type of win, keeps their Super Bowl hopes alive. Winning the way they did, to me, you might feel better about this year's Chiefs team than last year's Chiefs team, even though last year's Chiefs team had the number one overall seed and this year's Chiefs team won't. Because at the last year's team was 12-4, this year's team is going to be 12-4. Last year's team lost to the Patriots in the regular season at home, or I'm sorry, in Foxborough and then at home in the playoffs, just went to Foxborough and beat them. But most importantly, last year at the end of the season, Canty, the defense looked the worst it had looked all year long. It was starting to be really shaky. This year, defense gave up 17 to the Chargers, 9 to the Raiders, and now 16 to New England. The defense is peaking at the exact right time, and nobody thinks the Chiefs need to have a top 5 defense. They just can't have a bottom 5 defense. So, and I know we're going to talk about the calls, and there were some questionable calls one against New England, but the Chiefs kept their Super Bowl, realistic Super Bowl aspirations alive. And they exercised some demons from last season by going into that stadium and beating that quarterback and that coach.
Well, confidence comes from demonstrated performance and having the opportunity to actually go into Foxborough, where the Patriots are virtually unbeatable, and get that win. I think that's huge moving forward, just knowing that if they have to go down that road again, that this is a team that's more than capable of being able to get that done. The New England Patriots, even though that was an ugly loss yesterday and they've got some ugly losses this season, this is a situation where they still have the inside track to have a first round bye. So they will be one of the top two seeds in the AFC. So eventually, you're probably going to have to go into Foxborough. Listen, now with the New England Patriots remaining schedule, the Cincinnati Bengals, you have the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins. I think the Patriots are done losing this season. That Bills game is in Foxborough. So I just look at this situation for the Chiefs, knowing that you have the potential to be the three seed when the playoffs start. If you do have to go back in Foxborough and say the divisional round and get a win, you have this experience to be able to draw on. But to your point about their defense showed up in situational football probably more so than we expected. They were able to hold the Patriots offense to 2-12 on third down and 1-3 in the red zone. If you're playing that well in situational football, that's something that bodes well once you get to the postseason.
And they took the Patriots punch at the beginning. The Patriots get 2 third-down conversions via penalty and then run a trick play because they know the offense is going to be stagnant, and they get a touchdown. That's immediately followed by a Patrick Mahomes interception. Mahomes started this game with the most consecutive incompletions of his career and threw a pick, and it felt like you got to be kidding. Like, same old story. And then to survive that and then also survive the rally at the end, to me, spoke a lot to what the Chiefs are made of.
But also they needed help from the Chiefs' defense because Patrick Mahomes was not 100%. The hand was bothering him. He got hit in the stomach. It seemed like his ribs were bothering him. He was kind of gimping along, didn't have his best game, and still obviously came out with the win, thanks in large part, obviously, to their defense. But we heard something yesterday that I've never heard at Foxborough. Fans booing the Patriots, actually booing. Belichick was asked afterwards, and shockingly, he gave a two-word answer. Nick, how concerned or worried should the Patriots be about at least this last month of offense, but really their offense this entire season?
Patriots' offense is bad. Like, this is not, you look at the teams that, remember early in the year I kept saying, if you took every team's offense, defense, and special teams, the best unit in all of football was the Patriots' secondary, the Patriots' pass defense in particular. I don't know if that's true anymore. But right now, if you took all the teams that we know are going to be in the playoffs, all the 9-win or better teams, the weakest unit of all of them is the Patriots' offense right now. Mm-hmm. They can't run the football. Sony Michel got a few carries early, and then he got banished. They actually started running the ball with James White, something they almost never do. They had two drives where they accumulated more than 45 yards. Patriots' five biggest plays of the game: a flea flicker, mm-hmm, a pass from the running back, defensive pass interference, and a 42-year-old man scrambling for his life on fourth down. They can't move the football. I have no reason to believe that's going to change. And that's the only reason why, when you're saying you think they're done losing for the rest of the year, I think they'll beat Buffalo, mm-hmm, but Buffalo's defense is good enough that if the offense stays this stagnant, to me, it wouldn't be shocking if they lost that game. The offense is in real trouble in New England.
No, the offense is in real trouble, and we saw outside of the trick play early on in that game, the only way they were able to set up points for a touchdown was by that block punt by Nate Ebner, led to the Brandon Bolden touchdown run. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. We should be concerned about this Patriots offense. I know I've tried to give them as much time as they need in order, sure, to develop an identity, but usually around this time of the year, we figured out who the Patriots are going to be,
sure,
once we're going into January football, but they just haven't done that, Nick. If you look at yesterday's game, averaged 4.5 yards of play. I think that's a true indicator of how much productivity you're getting from the offensive side of the ball. On the season, they're right around 5 yards. For context, the league average is 5.5 yards per play. So this would be one of the worst offenses Bill Belichick has ever coached. This would be the worst offense in terms of yards per play this entire decade. So I think it's at a point now when you see the pressure that they allowed on Tom Brady, that offensive line, which had some moving parts yesterday because Ted Karras was out. When you see the inability to be able to have balance with the run game, and then you see that Tom Brady is not on the same page with the receivers outside of Julian Edelman, I feel like there's a lot to worry about in terms of this Patriots offense being good enough for them to compete for a championship.
And in about 20 minutes, we're going to get to the officiating stuff. But the officiating stuff would not have been a story if the alleged scoop and score, I think Tyreek Hill might have gotten him, but the thing that was whistled dead and then also the stepped out of bounds happened on the same drive. That drive culminated in a first and goal from the 3. If that offense can just punch it in, then the officiating is a footnote rather than a major story. They had 3 opportunities starting first and goal from the 3, and they had to settle for a field goal because they took a negative play. They ended up not being able to get the yards necessary. This Pats team, they need blocked punts. They need trick plays. They need defensive scores, or else they've broken 20 points once in the last 5 football games.
That was last Sunday night against the Texans.
And it was a game they had 9 points with 4 minutes left.
As poorly as they played, they were still down a touchdown at the very end and could have at
finished
least
down a
it
touchdown
up.
Too.
Time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. Will always get the last word. Patty Mahomes was solid. He was not spectacular, though. by his MVP standards. However, he picks up his first career win against the Patriots. Nick, put a grade on Mahomes' game.
Yeah, I disagree. I think Patrick was outstanding. I thought the first drive of the game, he was once again shaky against New England, picked himself up, rallied. You mentioned the fact that he clearly, something happened to his hand, I think, when he got tackled on one play. To against that defense, to come back from the one mistake and then play the way he did, as composed as he did in that environment, I give him an A, especially considering the context of how important the game was for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a B+. I mean, there were some mistakes on Pat Mahomes' part, but being able to go into Foxborough and get that win, I thought that was phenomenal. I mean, whether it was zone or man, the Patriots defense really didn't have any answers for that Chiefs offense early on. They scored on 5 of their first 7 possessions. So the fact that Pat Mahomes was able to do that and dictate the complexion of the game and go up 23-7, I think that was impressive, and that went a long ways to them winning that game.
NFC West matchup yesterday between the Rams and the Seahawks, and we finally saw that Sean McVay high-powered offense again. Jared Goff passing for 293 yards and 2 touchdowns. Todd Gurley adding 113 total yards and a touchdown. As the Seahawks snap their 5-game win streak, Rams win it 28-12. Nick, how seriously do we have to take the Rams in the NFC? Or judging by your face, not very serious.
Not very seriously at all.
Okay.
If they hadn't blown that home game to Tampa early in the year when they scored 40 and lost, if they hadn't gone to Pittsburgh when Pittsburgh was on their second or third quarterback and only allowed 17 and lost, then we'd be talking about something here. Mm-hmm. We'd be talking about, is this a team that had a little Super Bowl malaise? You know, it shook it off, and now is going to be a dangerous sixth seed. But how seriously do I have to take a team that's going to miss the playoffs? Not that seriously. And so, credit to the Rams for getting a win that I did not expect yesterday. I thought Seattle would win. I thought Seattle was going to be able to keep pace with San Francisco, if not take the outright lead in the division, because I didn't think San Francisco was going to do what they did in New Orleans. And so that's an excellent win. And it does speak, though, to where we've changed our expectations with this team, Canny, when in a game where Cooks has 0 catches for 0 yards, obviously, Todd Gurley, it felt like he had a huge game, and then you're like, oh, 23 for 79, 120-yard run, and Jared Goff has 2 touchdowns and 2 picks. We're like, man, that Rams offense is back. I think it speaks to where they had been up until the last couple weeks. So the season's not going to be an embarrassment for them. They're not going to finish with 6 or 7 wins. We know that now. But I still don't think they're going to make the playoffs, and I still think they're going to be in big, big trouble going into next season because of the contracts they have on that team moving forward.
Yeah, I think they're going to come up just short. Their next 3 games at Dallas, at San Francisco, and then home against Arizona in week 17. That San Francisco game is the one that you look at and say, 8-ball says doubtful that they'll be able to go in there and get a win. But, I mean, listen, the playoffs started a couple of weeks ago for the Rams when they had that Monday night loss to the Baltimore Ravens. But they've won 5 out of the last 7, so you give them credit for that. But you just recognize because they got off to the slow start, their margin for error was razor thin. But last night, you got to give them credit.
It was a good win for them last night.
It was a good win for them. They beat a division opponent at home. Now, I don't know why I got on that Seattle Seahawks corner with Nick Wright after what he said on Friday, because I should have known better.
I cost you some money.
It was a short week for the Seattle Seahawks because they played on Monday night and then going on the road against a division opponent who had their back up against the wall. But listen, Jared Goff played well, especially in the first half of that game. He continued what he did in that game that he had against Arizona, where he threw for 400 yards. And I think it was a situation where that offense was clicking early. First 2 drives, 8 plays, 75 yards, capped by a Malcolm Brown touchdown run, and then 12 plays, 85 yards. So I just looked at that in terms of them dictating the complexion of the game, and Seattle just could not make enough plays offensively. I thought they had a chance late in that third quarter after the missed field goal, and they had a 3rd and 7 in plus territory, and then Aaron Donald comes up with the sack, and they end up forcing the punt, and I thought that was the difference in the game.
I think the Rams' defensive front was outstanding. Russell Wilson was under duress the entire game.
The 5 sacks don't tell the whole story because they were getting after him.
Even more so than that. I agree. I thought the Rams' defense really played a brilliant football game. I just, I, I can't take them seriously as a contender because of, like you said, they'd have to run the table the rest of the way. I don't think they can go to San Francisco and get a win.
But it was one of those, did the Rams play well? Did Seattle play terribly? You don't really know who sort of you would place all the, you know, give the kudos to. But I'm wondering if you think that this hurt Seattle's Super Bowl chances at all, the loss and the way they lost yesterday.
Well, the one thing I do worry about with Seattle is not necessarily been the most consistent group on the offensive side of the ball. And then they lost Rashad Penny on the first drive. And a knee injury, we'll have to wait
never
for the diagnosis,
back.
See how that goes. But he never came back in the game, and he had been playing really, really well. So I just worry about that offense being able to do enough, being able to score enough points, because that defense has been Jekyll and Hyde for the Seattle Seahawks. Now, they showed up yesterday in the second half, Quadri Diggs, a couple of takeaways, including the pick six early. But that defense has got to be better in order for this Seahawks team to really be taken seriously as a contender.
So listen, so people are going to, I think, overreact to the impact this has on Seattle's standing, because if they'd have won today, they wake up as the one seed. They lose, they end up waking up as a five seed. With that said, Seattle still has it all in front of them. Because they beat San Francisco earlier and they have San Francisco in Week 17, that Week 17 Niner game, mark it down now, it's going to be 13-2 San Francisco against 12-3 Seattle, with the winner winning the division and assuredly getting a bye, and the loser falling all the way to the five seed. So this loss was oddly one they could handle as far as their positioning. Where it's concerning is, it's now a month of Russell Wilson going from running away with the MVP to not playing great. Since week 10, 4 touchdowns, 4 picks, 1 pick in each of these last 4 games. His passer rating's down 83 after the first 8 weeks of the year, 9 weeks of the year. It was 119. And that defense has not gotten better. Like, the Seahawks defense again allows 25-plus points. Warren Sharp pointed this out on Twitter. They've made a living all year about falling down big early, double digits early, being down at halftime, and finding a way to come back. Man, eventually you crap out. Like, eventually your luck runs cold on that. So that, to me, is the bigger concern for Seattle than the individual loss, because they still can win this division. They still can get a bye. I think they're going to win the next two. I think the next two are Carolina and Arizona.
Yep.
They shouldn't have trouble there. And then the huge matchup at home against San Francisco. But it's more stylistically, they were winning by a lot of Russell Wilson magic. And if that magic does not reappear in the final quarter of the season, then they don't have a whole ton of paths to being a Super Bowl contender.
Well, they need that magic to reappear, but they also need that defense to play better.
To
keep
show
in
up.
Mind, when they beat the San Francisco 49ers on that Monday night game, that was one of Jadeveon Clowney's best game, if not his best game, the entire year. Yep. Quadri Diggs also had a huge interception in that one, too. So they need that defense in order to be at their best and compete with the better teams in the NFC. But if you're talking about this Seattle Seahawks team, I do not have confidence, if they have to start the playoffs as a wild card, that this team can win 3 straight road games in order to get to the Super Bowl. I feel like this is a team that has to be able to be one of those top 2 seeds in the NFC in order to give themselves a chance in order to be a contender.
Do you agree with Canny, or was this a hiccup for this team last night?
Well, no, I think that they have to. I think the Niners, the whole NFC right now is so confusing, because it's so much of it is going to come down to who gets the buys, to your point. I agree that Seattle, if they don't win that Week 17 game against San Francisco and they're on the road in Week 1 of the playoffs and then have to go either to San Francisco, New Orleans, Green Bay, their path to the Super Bowl all of a sudden evaporates.
The Chiefs finally beat the Patriots at Foxborough. It wasn't without some controversy, though. Travis Kelce's fumble was blown dead, erasing what would likely have been a scoop and score. And the ensuing drive, N'Keal Harry was ruled out of bounds when he actually scored a touchdown, but the Patriots were out of challenges. A lot happened in this one. Canny, do you think the Patriots have a legit gripe with the officials after yesterday's game?
No, they absolutely have a gripe, Jenna. I mean, just the officiating, Jerome Boger's crew, they have to be better. You saw some gaps in the second half of that game. I mean, if you want to talk about the Sammy Watkins slant, where Bill Belichick challenged the spot on third down, I think that was up in question. Clearly, he didn't reach the yard line again, but they gave them the first down anyway. Then you look at that same possession. That was when you had the Travis Kelce fumble on the 3rd-and-2 crossing route that he had to catch. I mean, Devin McCourty pops it out. Stephon Gilmore picks it up, and it looks like it's going to be a scoring opportunity, but the refs blow it dead. They said the runner was down by contact, where clearly the ball was out. To me, those are situations where you have to let it play out. I mean, we saw this earlier in the season in that Rams-Saints game where they didn't let it play out, and it was clear that it could have been a game-changing play. The N'Keal Harry one was egregious, and then you had a non-call on a DPI by Kendall Fuller on Philip Dorsett on that last Patriots possession. You could have been talking about having first and goal at the 5-yard line as opposed to ended up having that 4th and 3 where they couldn't complete that pass to Julian Edelman. But in all of those situations, you have to look at the officiating and you have to be critical of it because you feel like they cost the Patriots in terms of some pivotal moments in that game last night.
All right, I'm going to take a deep breath here because this is, to me, so rich and borderline unbelievable. The reaction to, for the first time in my memory, some tough calls going against New England. And the just, it's raining here in New York City this morning. It actually is just all the tears pouring down from the greater New England area from all the crying that's been going on over the last 12 hours about this. So let's talk about all of these things.
Okay.
The fumble should have been not whistled dead, no doubt about it. Now, the idea that that was going to be a scoop and score, we showed the highlight. The fastest player in the league is already ahead of Stephon Gilmore, forcing him towards the sideline. Maybe that would have been a touchdown. Maybe it wouldn't have been. But, hey, Patriots had a challenge, their final challenge. More on that in a moment. And they get the ball. It's a mistake. I agree. It shouldn't have happened. The N'Keal Harry miss is an egregious miss by the officials. And the NFL, luckily, about 20 years ago, put a process in place to fix egregious misses by the officials. They're called challenges. It's important you don't blow them like Belichick did on a very questionable spot challenge. Spot challenges, you have to be certain you're correct. He risked it, and that's why that play wasn't challengeable. Belichick wasted a challenge like Andy Reid very often does and gets killed for. That's why they couldn't challenge it. Now, should the refs have made the right call? They should have, but they didn't. There's a process in place to fix it. Patriots had squandered it. Despite all that, they have a first and goal from the 3, and they can't punch it in. And by the way, so let's just say the refs cost them 4. Mm-hmm. I do think the Patriots lost by 7. Okay. But it sucks. Listen. It sucks to have the calls go against you. It sucked early in the game when the Patriots clearly roughed Patrick Mahomes. They threw a flag for it. Then the refs got together and said, we're not going to call it. It sucks when there's a phantom blindside block called that was called on the Chiefs' left guard. It sucks when there's a huge play and there's a phantom holding penalty called on the best right tackle in football, Mitchell Schwartz. And it sucks when you lose the penalty yardage battle 136-25. Because in this game where the Patriots...
Say it again.
There's 136 penalty yards on Kansas
136?
City.
136?
25 on the Patriots. Mm-hmm. But none of those things for the Chiefs hurt as badly as what happened to New England. I would just tell New England, I don't know, like, who could relate to what feels like egregious calls stealing a game from you? I mean, this was really bad. I don't know if it was as bad as one quarter of the entire tripping penalties of the year being called phantomly against you. Ask the Cowboys about that. Or last year in the AFC Championship game when a phantom roughing the passer penalty kept a Patriots touchdown drive alive in the fourth quarter. But the scoop and score is terrible.
Yes.
You know what's worse than a scoop and score being whistled dead in week 14 in the NFL?
Having it happen in the AFC
Championship game. So Patriot fans, as much as this hurts, you guys remember the Super Bowl you went to a couple years ago when you were down 10 and would have been down 17 against Jacksonville, but the refs whistled it dead? Or, I mean, I don't even have to go back 20 years to when we invented the tuck rule. Nobody ever heard of the tuck rule. So, hey, Pat fans, I feel your pain because the whole league has been feeling this pain, except for New England fans, for 20 years. And in a game where they have 111 fewer penalty yards than their opponent, it still finally feels like, man, it kind of went against us. That's the NFL in 2019, guys. And welcome to it, New England Patriot fans.
No, here's the thing. I don't understand the whole penalty issue because I understand the refs call the penalties. But it's a situation where the Patriots played a cleaner game in terms of not making any mistakes than the Chiefs. You can't be upset that the calls didn't go the Patriots' way just because the Chiefs were penalized more.
Well, they threw a penalty for roughing Patrick Mahomes. They clearly landed on it. They then got together and then didn't.
The Chase Winovich one.
Yeah. I know. Shoved him out of bounds into one of the heaters, And the refs are, and they didn't call that. So that, I mean, that would have been 30 yards. Listen, it's tough, man. It's bad luck. It sucks. But they, we call, the Patriots, the refs called some 4 points, right? Okay. They got a field goal out of it.
Okay.
They lost by 7, right?
Yeah.
So
no, I understand that. But if you're talking about first and goal because of the Philip Dorsett, Kendall Fuller, DPI situation that should have been called, that Belichick should have had a challenge for, if he didn't have to challenge whether Travis Kelce was down or not on that fumble, then you're talking about potential different outcome.
Okay.
The Patriots having 4 opportunities, had goal to go inside the 5, I think you're talking about a different situation.
I agree with you, even though they had a first and goal from the 3 after all this and they couldn't punch that one in. But by the way, on that challenge, this all is fruit of the same poisonous tree. If Belichick doesn't make that first bad challenge, he can challenge the N'Keal Harry, then you get a bonus challenge and he could have challenged that other one. Hey man, blowing challenges is tough. I've been watching my team do it for 20 years.
How about
years.
The ref get the call right so he doesn't have to use two challenges?
I agree with you, but this is the NFL in 2019, Canny. We get these calls wrong all the time. It's unfortunate, but such is life. I feel for him, though. It sucks. It sucks. It hurt me. It hurt me last year in the AFC. It hurt me last year in the AFC Championship game.
So sarcastic.
I can't imagine.
You can feel it?
I feel it.
Yeah,
it hurts.
It's palpable.
I don't know what to tell you.
All right, let's
tough
move on.
Calls.
Hard
Man.
As it is. Game of the
I'd
day
I'd send
yesterday.
A letter to the league office.
49ers in New Orleans. Just email them. Pick this one up in the fourth quarter. It was a tight game throughout, though. Drew Brees finding Michael Thomas for a 21-yard touchdown. One of his 11 catches on the day. Thomas is on pace for a record 149 catches this season. Just under a minute left in the fourth. Brees tossing his 5th touchdown of the day, this one to Tre'Quan Smith. Saints go up 46-45. San Fran would have one more chance, and they would not waste it. 4th and 2. How about the call? Jimmy G to George Kittle for a 39-yard catch and run while Marcus Williams is literally grabbing at his face mask. Muscles his way down. That sets up the Robbie Gould 30-yard field goal winner. Nails it as the clock expires. The San Francisco 49ers win 48-46. They now sit alone atop the NFC with an 11-2 record. All right, Nick, did San Francisco prove they are the best team in the conference?
Man, Canny, I got to give you credit. Richard Sherman, I got to give him credit. The greater Bay Area, who already doesn't like me because of all the whole Warrior stuff, I got to give them credit. Man, your football team's really, really good. And they won a game a way I didn't think they could. Could they go to New Orleans and win? I didn't think they would. I picked New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought if you'd have told me, we're talking about a Niner win today, I'd say, oh, okay, 24-21. They maybe get a strip sack of Drew Brees, set up a short field. If you tell me this is going to be a shootout, I said it would have been not a shootout, an execution, that the Saints just annihilate them. Mm-hmm. I did not think, Canny, the Niners had this in them in that environment going where Drew Brees plays one of his best games of the season. Now, it's not over for the Niners because they still have to play Week 17 against Seattle. They still could fall all the way to the 5. They could be a 13-3-5 seed with one loss to Seattle. And so we got to see how it plays out. But right now, they annihilate Green Bay. They play Baltimore damn near to a draw on a monsoon mm-hmm. on the road. And then they go do that. That is an impressive month of football for the San Francisco 49ers.
No, it's really impressive what this team has been doing and the fact that they were able to go into the Superdome and get a win. I mean, that speaks volumes about what your team is made of. And then your quarterback in the late game theatrics that we saw from Jimmy Garoppolo, I mean, to get the ball with less than a minute to go and drive him 7 plays, 63 yards to set up that field goal, including a 4th and 2 throw to George Kittle, which he turns into a 39-yard gain, plus the personal foul for the face mask to move your kicker even closer. I just feel like that was the moment we were all waiting on. And Richard Sherman talked about it a little bit after the game. He said that Jimmy Garoppolo played yesterday like the best quarterback in the league. Now, I understand he's putting a little bit on it because of his quarterback.
Of course he is.
But the fact that they went in and hung 48 on the New Orleans Saints, that was impressive. This is a different Saints defense than in years past.
Yes.
Dennis Allen has that group improved, but the fact that they were able to weather the early storm, you saw the Saints march down the field the first couple of possessions and touchdown passes to Jared Cook. The fact they were able to fight their way out of that was really impressive to me. But this game, in my opinion, came down to the fact that San Francisco was able to capitalize on the miscues more than New Orleans did. Off of the interception that tipped off on Emmanuel Sanders' hands, The Saints only got a field goal out of that. If you look at the fumble from Alvin Kamara and then the fake bunt by Taysom Hill, which was a terrible call, the San Francisco 49ers got two touchdowns off of those mistakes. So you're talking about the points off of turnovers being 14-3, the difference of the game right there.
Well, and you mentioned Jimmy Garoppolo. I got to give Jimmy G credit now. Dating back to week 8, he's played 7 football games. One of them, Jenna, he's had a passer rating below 110. Now, it was a real bad game. It was the game against Seattle, which, man, if they'd have taken the tie against Seattle, they'd have the one seed locked up. They'd be too clear of Seattle. They'd be too clear of New Orleans with 3 to play. But Jimmy G has played really, really well. You're right, the fake punt, I'll never understand. 4th-and-18 fake punt, I'll never understand it the rest of my life. But New Orleans started the game with 4 straight touchdowns, and San Francisco won. I never thought that could have happened.
But credit Kyle Shanahan for allowing Jimmy G to go out there and throw his way to a win. Look, if you're going to doubt any part of this San Francisco team, it was, for most people,
yes,
it was their quarterback. Did he prove everybody wrong? I know what, you know, Sherman said, and I know Emmanuel Sanders came out yesterday and said, this guy's really good. No one's really seen it. Did we see it yesterday?
Well, I mean, if you can go into New Orleans and get a win, you tell me the NFC opponent that they can't go into their building and beat them. Like, I don't know. I mean, in terms of home field advantage, I would put the Superdome right up there,
yep,
with where Seattle is at, with Lambeau
New
Field,
England.
New England. I mean, it's right there at the top of the list. So the fact that they were able to do that, again, kind of what we said about the Kansas City Chiefs in terms of being able to have the confidence to know that you can go into that building and win. I mean, if for some reason the 49ers don't have one of those top 2 seeds and they start off the playoffs as a wild card,
right,
I think the way that this team is built, they can go on the road and get a win because their defense will travel, their running game will travel. The only question has been their quarterback. And based on how he played yesterday, I don't know how you couldn't feel good about your chances with Jimmy G.
Well, and that last point to me is the most important one. Because, again, the seedings this year is going to be haywire. Seattle or San Francisco, one of them is going to be the 5 seed. If San Francisco could win their next 2, and if they lose week 17 at Seattle, they will be a 13-3 wildly overqualified 5 seed. If that happens, they're going to have to go back to New Orleans. And now they know they can not only win there, they can win there playing the Saints style of football. And the Saints, for all year, they've been understandably upset at the officials. They got to look at themselves on this one. The 2-point conversion after they took the lead late, it was a very odd play in a critical spot where the difference between being up 1 and up 3 is enormous. Your point on not taking advantage of the turnovers, the fake punt was just horrific game management. That is more aggressive than any analytics master would tell you to do. So New Orleans, still, they can still get the 1, but they would have been in great position if they could have held on for that win yesterday.
You know who once felt really good about Jimmy Garoppolo?
Who?
The New England Patriots.
Oh, yeah. They still might. Did you know that as many as 7 out of 10 adults wished they played a musical instrument? Unfortunately, many never do because they think it's either too late for them to start or too expensive. Musician is an online music education platform rethinking the way people learn music. It's the fun, easy, and affordable way to learn guitar, piano, bass, ukulele, or even learn to sing. Just download the app to your desktop, tablet, or phone and start playing. Musician is perfect whether you're just starting out or have been playing for years. Enjoy thousands of popular songs, expertly crafted lessons and exercises across dozens of genres. Compared to private lessons, Musician is more affordable, lets you learn on your own schedule. You'll get bite-sized lessons, easy-to-follow instructions, and exercises tailored to your goals. Using Musician to learn an instrument like guitar or piano is much better than trying to teach yourself. So, if you've been wanting to learn an instrument or simply want some help getting back to playing, check out Musician. You can get an extended 14-day free trial of their premium package at musician.com/play. That's unlimited lessons and unlimited songs on as many instruments as you want for 2 whole weeks. Just go to musician.com/play to start your free trial today. That's YOUSICIAN.com/play.
Back here, first things first, now joined by Fox College football analyst Joel Klatt in studio. It's nice to have you here.
I love
here.
It. I love being here.
We are so excited.
I'm just here with all the New England tears raining down on us.
That's what you said too, huh? Listen, man, two guys, man.
Well, I'm just going by what he said.
I don't make the weather. I just report it. I'm looking outside. I don't know. I don't know where else it could have come from. Good to see you.
You too, man. You too. A
lot going on in the NFL. Even more going on right now in college ranks. Yeah. Let's get to it. The college football playoff is set after a great weekend of action. Joe Burrow and the LSU Tigers will face off against Jalen Hurts and the Oklahoma Sooners in the Peach Bowl, while Justin Fields and Ohio State will take on Trevor Lawrence and Clemson in the Fiesta Bowl. So after a season of shuffling at the top, it is LSU, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Clemson. Joel, did the committee get it right?
Yeah, I don't think that they had any way to get this wrong, right? Unless they were going to do something absolutely crazy with Georgia as a two-loss non-champion over Oklahoma. I didn't think that was going to be the case whatsoever.
Joel might have resigned if that happened.
I think I would have. I think I would. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I would have gone. I would have become a banker or something like that. I will say, at number one, I think that there was a conversation and a pretty vigorous debate between Ohio State and LSU and what their resumes were. At the end of the day, I still was the one supporting Ohio State. I thought that they were more dominant over the ranked teams that they had played during the course of the year versus what LSU had done. But LSU's performance specifically on Saturday against Georgia, I think ultimately was the trump card in that room and what made them the number one team in the country here going into the playoff.
I thought during the selection show, just to give them credit, I forget who it was, someone made a good point. So the argument for Ohio State was what they did in the second half against Wisconsin, blanking Wisconsin to come back.
Yeah, 27-0 run.
And the counterpoint was, and if it could have been 30-0, thanks Ohio State, punched the last one in, you'd have covered. But regardless, the counterpoint was, yeah, LSU didn't need a great second half because they had a great first half and a great second half. So I don't think that there's a wrong answer here. Did the way it shook out, did it shake out to give us the best semifinal, in your opinion?
I think that ultimately the number one seed was so important this year because of this looming giant that has won 28 straight games. They're the defending national champion, and everyone was angling towards trying to avoid playing Clemson in the national semifinal because they still have Trevor Lawrence, who won the national championship a year ago. They still have Dabo Swinney. Their defense has played dominant football during the course of the year. This is a team that, candidly, they might win it all still, you know, because someone's got to go out there and actually beat them and end this 28-game winning streak if they're going to take down a national championship. So that's why I thought there was so much angling going on. If you wanted to talk about Saturday, and yes, Ohio State did not play well in the first half, that's all well and good, but Ohio State never gave up 400 yards rushing to a bad Ole Miss team, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, at some point, you got to take in the whole body of work. Like I said, I had no problem with what they did, LSU at number one, but just to boil it down to one day, one half, and say this is why you're number one, this is one of the reasons why I bristle with the committee and this 13-member avenue of ranking teams. But ultimately, this is a really good four teams. And let's come to a bottom-line conclusion here. I'm so glad we have a playoff. Mm. You know, the BCS would have left Clemson out.
The defending national champion
has
won 20, and anyone argued against the playoff has to reckon with for back-to-back years, right?
That's right.
An undefeated team would have been left out. Like, you can say whether we need 4, 6, 8, whatever, but at 2, it would have been this year. You would have either pick who gets left out. The SEC champ with the Heisman Trophy winner, who arguably has the best resume. Mm-hmm. The Big Ten undefeated champ with the best player in the country, I think, in the pass rusher, Chase Young.
Mm-hmm.
And some would say the best resume, or the defending national champion, who ever since getting tested by UNC has just crushed the world and won 28 straight. One of those teams would have been told, you don't get to prove you're the national
champion. And it would have been Clemson, based on the calculation.
Which is crazy, but I mean, Clemson just sleepwalks through the ACC schedule. I mean, I'm an ACC guy, so I keep a close eye on it, and they demolished my Virginia Cavaliers in the ACC championship game on Saturday night in Charlotte. But you were talking about them and talking about how dynamic Trevor Lawrence is.
Yeah.
But on the defensive side of the ball, it's been a little Jekyll and Hyde for that Clemson team this year. I know they're ranked up there again this year, but for Brett Venables with this group, where does this Clemson defense stack up with Clemson defenses in the past couple of years?
Well, it's so different, you know, and if you look at what they were strong at and where they were strong a year ago, they were so great at the line of scrimmage. You think of all those guys in the NFL right now, right? I mean, the Christian Wilkins and so on and so forth, Dexter Lawrence, they were so strong up front, all Americans all across the defensive line. Now you've got a defense that is much stronger in the second level and the third level. So they're a secondary-oriented team. They follow Isaiah Simmons at the linebacker position. I think that's difficult because from a year-to-year shift, they've had to completely change where they're strong, how they develop pressure, how they stop the run, what they're going to do. And so what you saw, at least in my estimation, is a team that didn't really understand how to play early. They were trying to figure themselves out. They were able to do that because they were bored with that ACC schedule. But then late in the season, they started playing better and better and better. Lawrence was bored early in the season, was turning the football over, played better and better and better towards the end of the season. And now, here they are. They've been bored all year, very untested, and yet they're the defending national champ 28 games in a row. I think it's going to be tough to beat Clemson. I really do. Even if it's Ohio State and Phoenix, that's a tough game for Ohio State.
So you like Clemson in that game?
I'm not sure who I'm going to pick just yet. I think it's a flip for me. And I'm a pretty staunch, I believe in Ohio State. I saw them 7 times, for goodness sakes. I need an apartment in Columbus at this point. For me, it's a coin flip. I think Ohio State has been a great team. I think Clemson is a great team. I think Vegas is going to favor Clemson. I think
it opened by one, it moved up to 2.5, and now it's back around 1.5.
So they're right there, about a flip. It's going to be so interesting because Trevor Lawrence is this generational talent at the quarterback position, and we've got this great pass rusher from Ohio State who has been double and triple teamed now for 2 straight games. Did you see some of those videos of what Wisconsin was doing? Yeah. 4 guys just sitting on Chase Young. I can't wait to watch that play out. I think it's a coin flip. I think it actually comes down to the inexperienced quarterback for Ohio State. If Justin Fields plays well, I think Ohio State will have a great chance to win.
What about the other game, LSU and Oklahoma?
I mean, I've seen Oklahoma a bunch this year as well, and they're just not what they have been the last couple of years. I don't believe that defense is going to be able to do to LSU what they were able to do to Baylor. I mean, Baylor was playing with a backup quarterback, a third-string quarterback for portions of that game in the Big 12 championship game, and LSU is going to carve them up. I really like Oklahoma had a good year. It's great that they're in the playoff. They're a kind of a placeholder. We were all waiting for like, okay, who's the number 4 team? It's going to be. It was almost Oklahoma by default. Utah said no thanks. You know, Oregon said no thanks against Arizona State, and now Oklahoma's going to have to go play LSU. That's going to be really tough. And this whole playoff, by the way, is just playing into LSU's hands. They're going to be able to play in Atlanta where they just played. Then, if they win, most likely win against Oklahoma, they get basically a home game for the national championship, and they'll be able to play in New Orleans for the national championship against either Clemson or Ohio State.
Do you like LSU?
He's not going to give his pick.
Overall, I'm not
sure. He has to. That's what it says on the sheet. Ask Joel about his pick.
LSU over Oklahoma, yes.
Okay. All right, so you really know.
Any of these three, I think, would beat Oklahoma. There's no doubt. I think because of New Orleans, if I had to lay money today in Vegas, I would lay money on LSU.
I told you. The sheet said he was going to do it.
Well, so before we go, if I may, just real quick.
Yeah.
This has been, I think, the single best year for Fox in college football. The pregame show, you and Gus doing these great games, you have been such a huge part of it.
Oh, I appreciate that.
It's been a monster as far as people watching it and the quality of games, and you and Gus are the best tandem in the business.
Oh, man, that's nice of you. I feel a little, normally we argue.
We don't have to worry about it.
That's nice of you.
Thank you very much. Playoff with 4 home games.
A lot of hard work. A lot of people put in a lot of hard work.
You guys have done an amazing job.
Thank you.
We love to have you here in studio, Joel.
It's always good. You bet, Jenna.
Back here on First Things First, we are now joined by head coach Eric Mangini.
We're so excited to see you, coach. We're dropping things. How are you doing today, my friend?
Good to see you. So excited to be here.
I'm so happy to be here.
Good to see you.
Coach, let's talk some Patriots. Okay. All right, here we go. Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs in Foxborough to take on Tom Brady and the Patriots. There is Tom Brady. We'll pick this one up in the third. Chiefs in field goal range. Mahomes finds Travis Kelce on third down, but he loses the ball thanks to Devin McCourty. Kelce was ruled down, but after review, it is ruled Patriots ball. You know who's not happy about that? Bill Belichick. He thought the recovery could easily have gone for six. Who knows? On the ensuing drive, Brady finds rookie wideout N'Keal Harry. So Harry will tiptoe down the sideline, gets into the end zone, but the refs rule Harry was out of bounds, and he clearly wasn't.
Belichick's
Patriots
a challenge.
Out of challenges, though, Nick.
Damn.
So they'd have
Shouldn't
to settle
have
for a field goal to cut the lead to seven. One last possession for the Pats. The Chiefs send the house. Brady can't connect with Julian Edelman. Casey snaps the Patriots' 21-game home win streak. That is all. Coach Belichick, Mancini got so into it. How worried do you think the Patriots should be about the offense that you saw there, the offense we've seen the last month or so?
How happy is Nick right now?
So happy that I was supposed to ask him the question.
No, I want to hear from you. I'm excited.
He's like the guy who sits on the corner and screams a prediction, and then finally it comes through. He's like, oh, my God, I told you I was right. I told you. Look, there needs to be some concern, but there's been concern throughout the course of the season because of the issues that they have with the offensive line. And I've talked about this before. Those problems are real, and they're not going away. And it got... they took another step further yesterday, losing their not being able to play their starting center, who's a backup center for the captain who they lost. So it's been a series of challenges from an offensive line perspective. Have really no ability right now to run the ball on a consistent basis, and the amount of pressure on Tom is getting. It seems to be increasing on a weekly basis. So there's a lot of things that they have to overcome, but they still find a way to be in every single game. They still find a way to be in a position to win those games later, and against an offense that's supposed to be as prolific as Kansas City is, that disappears in the second half of yesterday's game. You know, it gives you them hope that if they get a few things straightened out, they get a chance here moving forward.
So the Patriots obviously should be immensely concerned about their offense. They never lose this game. They're at home. They win the turnover battle. They block a punt. They execute not one, but two trick plays, one for a touchdown, one for their second biggest gain of the day, and they still can't crack 17? Their five biggest plays by yardage on the day were a flea flicker, mm-hmm. a pass by the running back, one defensive pass interference, another defensive pass interference, and a 42-year-old man scrambling on fourth and six. Like, their offense has no ability to move the football against a supposedly horrible Chiefs defense. And now I understand the narrative can be that where it all went wrong for New England is their center and their fullback got hurt. And now they can't run the football. And now all these things. What I would argue is this. Teams do not respect their ability to throw it outside, so they are able to dedicate more people to stopping the run, and they're going to heat up Tom Brady, something for the first 17 years of his career he made a living off of. You could never blitz Tom Brady, and now you can, on the final play of a game, and the ball can be batted away. New England's last 5 weeks, they got whooped by Baltimore. They escaped against Philly. Philly hasn't won since. They escaped against Dallas. Dallas hasn't won since. They got whooped by Houston, a Houston team that just got annihilated at home by the Broncos. And they got beat by Kansas City at home, despite winning the turnover battle, despite blocking a punt. Yeah, it's time to be seriously concerned about New England, because as good as the defense is, when they play the best offenses, Canny, the offenses get at least to 20. Baltimore did, Houston did, Kansas City did. Can New England's offense do it? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, they've averaged, 18 points over the last five games, and they only cracked 20 once.
In garbage time.
And that was garbage time against the Texans. So, yeah, you absolutely have to be worried. But, Nick, you made a point about how Tom Brady was good against the blitz in years past. Well, I think that has to do with Tom Brady. Brady having the trust of his wide receivers. And outside of Julian Edelman, you can't say that Tom Brady has confidence in any of those guys. Jacoby Myers, he had another critical drop early in the fourth quarter that would have been a touchdown right there. They had to settle for a field goal. Like, those types of miscues, I think that's what's leading Tom Brady down this road where he's frustrated and he's constantly trying to get in the ear of those receivers, because those guys aren't being able to create the separation versus man coverage that he's accustomed to seeing. So when they do come with extra defenders on the rush, Tom Brady doesn't have any outlet to go to, because everybody knows we're going to take away Julian Edelman and you don't have any answers, at least not on a consistent basis. But in watching yesterday's game, especially in the second half, there were a couple of situations that you have to look at and you say, you know what, if the officials make the right call in those situations, you're probably talking about the complexion of the game being a little bit different. Like the N'Keal Harry touchdown that they ruled he was out of bounds on the three. I don't understand what the point is of calling that play dead at the three when all scoring plays are reviewed. Just review the play. It was a situation where you obviously see that N'Keal Harry was able to keep that left foot in bounds and extend to the pylon. To me, that's one of those situations where I know we like to say that Tom Brady and the Patriots offense was awful, but that officiating was really bad, and I felt like it cost them an opportunity to win that game.
Yeah, and we can criticize New England's offense, and the bar has been set so high for them to overcome any type of adversity. And we can say, well, look, they've got a few problems on the offensive line. They're on their third center, okay? They're on their this is the fourth left tackle that's cycled through here. Those problems are significant, and it's not just the pressure. It's the how quickly defenders are getting on Tom Brady in three and four man rushes. And that last play of the game, he did a great job of getting the protection right, being able to pick up that blitz. The leverage on the seven route was fantastic. They went to the right place, and it was a pretty good play by a defensive player. But New England, again, is in a position to tie that game.
I love it so much. I love it so much. The great job was done by the quarterback who threw the incomplete pass that ended the game. The pretty good job was done by the secondary player, the defensive back who batted it away. And we can. Some of these are little word games, Coach. They're on their fourth left tackle because they let Nate Solder walk, because they let Trent Brown walk. And now their left tackle is their first-round pick, Isaiah Wynn. Like, these are conscious decisions.
But we're talking about Isaiah Wynn in the middle of the season coming back from IR. N'Keal Harry, the same thing. Jacoby Myers is a rookie. Mohamed Sanu, they just got. So, look, we want to look at this and say that they can't do anything. But the things that they're overcoming would have crippled almost any other team. It doesn't happen for New England. And go ahead and take a victory lap with Kansas City, who scored 3 points in the second half. Polar opposite of what they've historically done, right? Where they're no good in the first half and actually play well in the second half. This time they just reversed it.
But you told me that last year, the second halves didn't matter because they lost. And now they won, but what if? And what if the call went their way? You're right. He should not have been ruled out of bounds.
Yes.
And if Belichick hadn't blown his first challenge, he could have challenged that. But despite that, they have first and goal from the three, and they can't punch it in because the offense has no punch whatsoever. And we can say, oh, well, last year they lost two in a row late as well. They did. The difference between this year's team and last year's team, among other things, is that there's four teams that matter in the AFC. New England, Baltimore, Houston, Kansas City. Baltimore, Houston, and Kansas City are 2-1 against those opposing three teams. New England, loss, loss, loss. If they are going to make the Super Bowl, they're going to have to beat one, if not two, of those teams. I have no evidence they can do it, and now I don't even have evidence they can do it in New England.
I think what you should probably do is write them off.
Okay. No problem.
Coach, let's play a little in or out, okay?
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
Sure.
All right. Yesterday, the Niners pulled out. I'm looking for just a little bit more. They pulled out a big win over the Saints. They now sit alone on top of the NFC at 11-2. Start with you, Kenny, because Coach didn't give me enough energy. Kenny, you in or out on San Francisco being the best team in the conference?
Jenna, I'm in on San Francisco being the best team. I mean, the fact that they were able to go on the road and get a win against what I thought was the best team in the NFC going into yesterday, that was impressive. The only question for the San Francisco 49ers has been, what will you get from their quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo? Yesterday, the way that he played, engineering that last-minute drive to put them in position for the go-ahead field goal, that's as impressive as any quarterback has had of a drive at the end of a game.
Yeah, I'm in on the 49ers as well. To be able to stay on the East Coast for back-to-back weeks, play Baltimore as well as they did, and then come out with the win like they did this weekend, to me, that's impressive. Now, I am pretty disappointed that they give up 45 points. I expected a lot more from that defense, and I thought there'd be more pressure on Drew Brees than what they got.
San Francisco, I have to give them credit. I'm in for the time being. Now, it's going to be 13-2 San Francisco against 12-3 Seattle in week 17. And if they can't go to Seattle and win, they're going to be the 5 seed. So they still have work left to do. But I thought Green Bay and New Orleans were better than them. They whooped Green Bay and they went to New Orleans and won. And in between there, they played Baltimore damn near to a draw on the road. So I have to give them credit for what they have accomplished, even if this isn't where they were in my eyes at the beginning of the year, even at the midway point. I'm in. They're a couple plays away from being 13-0. We're 12-0-1 at this point. Got to give him credit. Right now, they're the best team in the NFC.
All right, moving on. Tom Brady and the Patriots had been untouchable at Foxborough the last two seasons until yesterday. TB12 did not look great. 19 for 36, 169 yards, one touchdown, one pick. Kenny, you in or out on Tom Brady still being an elite quarterback?
I'm still in on Tom Brady being an elite quarterback, and this is a little bit of a lifetime achievement award. I'm assigning him this just because I've seen him play at such a high level for so long. I think the struggles that we've seen on the offensive end and in the passing game have more to do with the players around him, the offensive line being shaky, and the skill positions outside of Julian Edelman not being trustworthy in his eyes. So I think that's why we have to attribute the poor performance from Brady to some of those skill position players.
Man, really, on that last play, that could have been pass interference, too. It looked like the DB got there pretty early. But they missed a lot of calls yesterday. That happens in some of these games, and you gotta deal with it. But, of course, Tom's an elite quarterback. There's not many people that could do what Tom does on a consistent basis with the amount of challenges that they face this year, especially, and the amount of turnover that he's consistently dealing with.
Listen, I know this will shock everyone. I actually agree with Coach. There's not a lot of people that could do what Tom Brady can do. The whole world's got like 7.5 billion people. There's only like 25 of them who can even do it better than Tom Brady. Unfortunately,
you know what, Nick?
That's who we're comparing him to.
Eighth
straight game of a sub-100 passer rating. That's happened once in his career. It was his rookie season. Yesterday, he threw for 169 yards. If you remove the trickeration flea flicker, he was under 140 and had no touchdowns. Guys, come on. If he's still elite, why A. Tittle's asking why he can't get some of this as well. Peyton Manning's still elite. He's been retired a couple years. I mean, Brett Favre wants a piece of this.
Hey, he's aspiring to score 3 points in the second half like Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, wow.
Hopefully he can do that.
You know, he would have desperately loved 3 more points in the second half.
Yeah.
7 more points actually might have tied him the game.
He can only dream.
So much shade. The Browns picked up a win over the Bengals, but there is still controversy in Cleveland. According to our own Jay Glazer, Odell Beckham Jr. has been telling opposing coaches to, quote, come get me. Kenny, you in or out on the Browns trading OBJ this season?
I'm in on it, Jenna.
Off season.
But I'm in on it. They're not getting the utility that they thought they would from Beckham. Only 2 touchdown catches this year. Now, I'm not blaming the problems that Browns team and that offense are dealing with. I'm not putting that on Odell. But I think as a product of them not being able to utilize him more, that they will find their way in parting ways with him this offseason. And the cap hit is very manageable. The Giants took the cap hit when they traded him. So the Browns don't have to worry about that. Very tradable contract for Beckham.
Yeah, I'm in on them trading him as well. I think that Jarvis Landry deserves to be the marquee guy there, the way he plays. I really like Jarvis Landry a lot. And they're not getting anything out of Odell. He's not happy. They shouldn't have made the trade in the first place. Now, all that being said, because of that, they'll probably keep him.
Wow. Coach is on fire today. I'm in as well. This is your friends on the block that have 2 Lexuses in the driveway, or in Cantley's case, 2 Bentleys in the driveway, but the roof's leaking. Like, you deal with the fountain. Cantley's roof's not leaking, actually, by the way. Beautiful, pristine estate in New Jersey.
Lexus is a pretty reliable car.
Less reliable. He's not as reliable. Okay, my bad. Point is, Odell Beckham right now is a luxury the Cleveland Browns can't afford. He did not ask to be traded there. It has not seemed to work out. I think they could get more utilization from what he could return.
A lineman, someone to help out Baker.
Absolutely. And he might be happier as well. And I'm all for my guy Odell being happy. So I am in.
Of course you are.
Well, I just want people to be happy. I want you to be happy.
Yeah.
I want everyone to be happy.
Everybody.
On to to the Cleveland Browns now. They hosted the lowly Bengals for Ohio bragging rights yesterday. And while they were able to win the game, despite a pedestrian day from Baker Mayfield, who went 11 of 24 and tossed two picks, they seem to keep losing the PR battle. Before the game, Fox's own Jay Glazer reported that Odell Beckham has been telling opposing coaches to, quote, come get me. Here's Baker Mayfield talking about his star wideout.
The drama is just drama. It continues to be that on the outside. Within our walls, we know exactly what we have, and we have a good relationship where it's very straight to the point, so I'm not worried about that.
Has he ever given you the sense that he doesn't want to be here?
No, no, he wants to win. I've said that over and over again, and that's not going to change, and he's not going to change who he is. He's Odell, and he's proud to be who he is, and he wants to win.
Kenny, what's your reaction to what's going on right now in Cleveland?
Well, Beckham doesn't have the kind of cap hit that he has in 2019 for only two touchdowns. So, I mean, you're not getting essentially what you paid for, why you sent Jabril Peppers a first-round pick and a third-round pick to the New York Giants. You envisioned this being an explosive offense with Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, and then, of course, Kareem Hunt. Once he's come back from suspension, he's looked really good. But that offense hasn't been explosive this year. Baker Mayfield has got more interceptions than he does touchdowns. They're the 20th-ranked passing offense. So, yeah, with Odell Beckham Jr., you're not getting what you thought you would get out of him, and your offense is not as dynamic as you thought it would. So the fact that this team has issues up front with their offensive line, the fact that Beckham is still viewed as one of the game-breaking threats around the National Football League, I think that he has more value as an asset in order to bring back some pieces that could complement what you already have in place. The Cleveland Browns have skill position players, but they're big guys on offense. They need an upgrade. They traded away Kevin Zeitler in order to get Olivier Vernon from the New York Giants to help out that Browns defensive front. But I don't think they recognize how important that offensive line was to Baker Mayfield's second half success in his rookie year. So for all of those reasons, I think this is setting up for the Browns to make a move and trade Odell.
You know how certain trades we say, you look back, or even in real time, you say it's a win for both sides. Both sides got what they needed. Feels like the Giants-Browns-Beckham trade is a lose-lose. The Giants absolutely could have used Odell to try to shepherd along Daniel Jones in his rookie season, which got off to that great start and since then has gone all awry. And the Browns traded for an asset they didn't need. When you're looking at the team, they had Jarvis. They had invested in the wide receivers. Now, I liked the trade in real time in large part because I thought Baker was going to be a lot better than he's been. But I think this conversation is less about the X and O's football of it and more about Odell Beckham being unhappy in a place once again. And so it should be noted, Odell, even though it seemed like he wanted out of New York, did not ask to be traded to Cleveland. I think he thought he'd go to New England, San Francisco. He ends up being traded to Cleveland. Odell reminds me a lot of Kevin Durant in this regard. They're both seekers. And they both, I know I can't call Odell one of my closest friends, but I do consider Odell a friend. And he's angsty. And like, you know what I mean? A guy thinking about what's next all the time, even when things are going really well. Where he's different than KD is that he's always, to me, and one of the things I've respected, he's been very honest about it. He hasn't hidden it. When he was asked last week, and he got criticized for it last week, but he was asked last week, you know what I mean, do you want to be a Brown? And he gave an honest answer. If he is saying to coaches, come get me, Jay Glazer's right about just about everything he reports, it would have been, he was being honest. I don't know. Like, you know, I play other teams. It says, hey, come get me. Like, the problem for Odell, and what I don't know if this will change, unless maybe if he's on a really good team, maybe it would. If they do trade him, is he going to be really happy there? Maybe. If the team's winning and he's, but football's too hard, and you can speak to this far better than I can, football's too hard and the seasons are too long and careers are too long, if you're lucky, you're not always going to be winning. You're not, only New England gets to always win, right? And so Odell's got to, I feel like, almost become more at peace whether or not the team's having success, and that's going to serve him better moving forward. But I do think the Browns have to seriously consider moving on from him because it has been a pairing that hasn't worked out.
Well, Odell has been doing a lot of losing during his pro career. I think he's only had one winning season.
Yep.
That 2016 Giants team, that was a wild card team that ended up going to Green Bay and losing to the Packers. But, I mean, in looking at Odell in this situation, he is still a special talent. I still think that there is ability there. He's still a game breaker. He's still a number one receiver. It's just a matter of getting with a quarterback and getting with an offense where they can take advantage of everything that he has to offer. And it was clear that the Cleveland Browns early on couldn't necessarily fit Odell into what they were trying to do. Now, if you want to blame Freddie Kitchens, if you want to blame the offensive line, if you want to blame Baker Mayfield, I think all of them have to take some responsibility. But I don't look at this and say this is of Odell Beckham Jr.'s doing. I think this is more a product of the dysfunction that has gone on in Cleveland. And so when you look at their plan this offseason, I think it should absolutely be on the table to trade Odell just because they need resources to bring back assets to make this team better, to complement what they already have. If you have a number one draft pick at the quarterback position, you might want to think about protecting that guy. Right. That just makes sense.
And I agree it's not entirely of his doing and some circumstances, but the truth for Odell, first 3 years of his career were the most productive opening 3 years of any career ever. The final game of that third year was the playoff game. Since then, a year lost to injury, a year lost to bad quarterback play and unhappiness in New York, and now a wasted year in Cleveland. You don't get all these this many years. Through 3 years, he was on a no-doubt Hall of Fame track. Last 3 years, that's gone awry. Whether he's in Cleveland or somewhere else, I hope he gets back on track because the talent is undeniable.
And he's such a great talent. You can get something back for him that actually could help Cleveland next year, which is exactly what
they're very manageable salary, by the way, Jenna. Just a little over $14 million in 2020. Yeah. And it's only a $2.75 million dead cap for the Browns
if they decide to trade him. It's
absolutely nothing.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.